Okay, good morning, everyone. All right, we're at the top of page Kuf Samachay. Right at the top of the page. We're talking about the idea of Jews being B'nai Nevi'im. And we're talking how everyone has a little bit of that spark of Nevuah that comes from one's soul. And just like prophets of old were different based on the degree that they purified themselves, so it is in terms of the spark of prophecy that one can have nowadays. It depends as to how much one indulges one's body wholeheartedly into the physical things of this world. That would be compared to covering up the spark of prophecy with all kinds of dirt and filth and cement and all this stuff. And it doesn't allow that spirit of prophecy to be heard. And to the degree that one can hold on to one's soul, to that degree, one is able to have that that ability of prophecy to be connected to that person. So at the top of Kuf Samachay, there was somebody who said he had a question to ask at the end of the class, and that person is not here. Okay, so we'll continue on Kuf Samachay. Zel Shamarnu Lecha. And that's what we told you in the beginning of this essay. Shekeven shavartas devarenu ad ko. Since you have read our words until this point. And lo b'kriya levad. But if it wasn't only just reading. V'lagam b'avoida. But in terms of service to Hashem. Kivishur shamilcha, as we spoke to you. Because if you did the things we told you to do. And dealt with some of the negative qualities that were there. And worked on some of the positive ones. What must have happened? We are certain with Hashem's help that you yourself have grown spiritual wings to ascend higher in pure thoughts and desires, uchukim v'rayonos yisor b'cha, and yearnings and thoughts will arouse within you. And thereby, by themselves, by yourself, you'll begin to seek out the words of Hashem through our holy writings, which are filled with the words of Hashem, that their marriage should be a protection for us. Now, if that's the case, and you're going to now want to get involved in learning Sifre Chassidus, works of Chassidus, so now we've got to be very careful. And because of that reason, we are compelled to teach you a little bit. How to read and understand a little bit their holy words. You have to know how to learn Sifre Chassidus, works of Chassidus. There's a way you have to go about learning this. I already told you that in the words of the Torah, when it says, B'nei Nevi'im, children of Nevi'im, Shebnei Nevi'im mitargeim hatargum, the Aramaic explanation explains it as Talmidei Nevi'ayo, students of the prophets. As we said, a novice prophet needed teaching to learn how to be a prophet properly. So if they needed teaching, and they were the students of prophets, were much greater than we are, certainly. And why? The students of the prophets, these neophyte prophets, who needed to learn and to know and understand the spirit of Hashem that was beating upon them, even if it was very little. And they needed teachers. Shmuel Hanavi needed a teacher. What can we answer? Those people who come after them. But Dor Hamnamo Chazeh, this lowly generation, Dor Ha'akevayim, the generation of the heels, Bimat Mimaachel and Nitzotz to Nitzotz Asher Misarabanu, that little bit of that spark that's in us, certainly we need teaching in order to be able to fathom that minuscule amount of prophecy that comes with us. So that's how he's tied it full circle so far in this essay. Where the Rebbe is confident, if we're beginning to work, read through the book and do some of the things the Rebbe says, and how we have to raise our perspectives and constantly grow. And that's what we're going to be looking for, to be learning more. And if we're learning more, then you're liable to get into all kinds of problems if you're learning Sifrei Chassidus, if you don't know how to learn it properly. And therefore, because we're all Bnei Nevi'im, and there's the spark of prophecy we're trying to touch, the question is how, through our learning, will we begin to touch that? And that's the point. The point of learning Sifrei Chassidus is to touch that little pintala nevuah, the little bit of prophecy, that part of our soul that wants, that we can access to get that understanding. So he begins with a mishnah in Pirkei Avos, with a very good question on it, and he's going to be going for a long time and giving us, laying down a primary, basic principles of Kabbalah to help us understand these concepts over here. So he begins. In our Mishnah Omeris, the Mishnah says in Pirkei Avos, Kol shechachmaso meruba mimaisov, anyone whose wisdom is greater than his actions. Lama dover domer, what can that be compared to? Oh, perfect. Le'ilon shanofav merubim v'sharoshav muatim, can be compared to a tree whose branches are many and whose roots are few. Right? A person who has a lot of chokmah, he has a lot of wisdom, but the wisdom isn't matched with actions. You see, actions ground a person in this world. It's, you know, they are theoretical people who can talk theory all their lives, but don't do a lot. They're usually called university professors. That's what they're usually called. You know, a lot of theory, but they don't follow up. They don't really do. That's a generality in the university world. Yes. So, but if you don't do actions give you stability. So a person, he learns a lot. He's very wise. But the actions don't come close to match the wisdom that he has. So he's compared to a tree that looks beautiful on the outside. You know, beautiful, beautiful leaves, foliage, unbelievable, but doesn't have a lot of roots. So what happens? A wind comes along, blows it away, uproots it. So, now, what is, there's a couple questions here. We'll try to understand just in a simple way. Mahi hamido limdoid bo es chachmaso im meruba hi omaso merubim. So what is going to be the measuring tool? What's the measure that we could use to measure wisdom if that wisdom is greater than your action? Or is your action greater than your wisdom? How can you measure this? Well, he learned, he knows the whole Chumash, right? And he does 18 mitzvahs a week. So how does that, is the wisdom greater than that? How do you measure a mitzvah? How many points is an action? How many points is a page of Chumash? Gemara. So how are we ever going to know that your wisdom is greater than your actions? Or your actions greater than your wisdom? It's a very unusual kind of statement that's very difficult to define. I mean, learn Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos is Lamaisa. Pirkei Avos is, okay, it's Tachlis. How to be a mensch. So we give you a measuring tool without giving us the ability to measure. Actions greater. Okay. My actions got to be greater than my learning. So, how many points is an action? How many points is a learning? So that's a question. Number one. And he elaborates on it because Kial Pi Poshit Koshit, because based on this, it would be very hard for us. Ech Mutu Lanur Lilmoid Zoyer HaKodesh Ushor Svarim Kedoshim. How would we be permitted to learn the Holy Zohar or other holy works? Shemedabrim Inyonim Gvoyim Velamos. Because it talks about very lofty things. It talks about spiritual worlds that are beyond us, such as Atzilus, Bria, Vietzira. We know there are four spiritual worlds. Three of them are beyond our world. The world of Atzilus, which is the world as close to Hashem as one can be, where all you have in that world is the divine will. The divine will which isn't even manifest in ideas we can even comprehend. It has no manifestation. But that's a whole world, a realm of existence that's there. It's beyond our comprehension. It feeds into a world of Bria. It feeds into a world where the characteristics of God are initiated and begin to formulate beyond our concepts. And then even the world of Yetzira, where it goes into the angelic world, where they take those characteristics and qualities and now have a mission to accomplish something. These are all worlds that are beyond us, but we learn about these worlds. Till it comes into this world down here, that's the world of Asiya. That's our world. So three out of the four worlds are beyond our knowledge. How do we dare open up a Zohar and learn about these previous worlds, where what kind of actions can I do in those worlds? That's a classic example of Chachmas or Meruba Mamaisav. My wisdom is greater than my actions. So I'm going to learn something about the world of Atzilus. What am I going to do in the world of Atzilus? There's nothing I can do there. So why should I be learning about that? Right? Hayim Nala Ba'alama Se'elu, can we ascend into those worlds? V'lama Ein Gam Limud Hazech Chachmas or Meruba Mamaisav. So wouldn't that constitute a learning of wisdom that's greater than our actions? So what the Rebbe at this point is opening up the discussion, he's really bringing out the idea that before we can answer or learn how to learn a Chassidish Sefer, we have to ask the question, why are we even allowed to learn them, as they are filled with Kabbalah? That's beyond our realm of understanding in this world. There'll be no action following up on this. All right, this is part of the greater argument about how much of Kabbalah should be revealed when learning Chassidus. And Chassidus is predicated on the concepts of Kabbalah. So how much Kabbalah should we be taught? Should we be learning in this area? Because this is part of the problem. Kabbalah is a chachma that would seem to be beyond our meisim. And if you learn all this kind of Kabbalah. You know, that's why you have, you know, all these secular people learning from the Kabbalah Center. Right? The Kabbalah Center is the classic. Now, if they listen to this tape, I will be sued. I'll be sold for defamation of character. You know, but a Kabbalah Center that teaches you a lot of Kabbalah. Half of it isn't even true. But even if there's a little bit that is true, there's got to be something that's true or no one will be interested in it. They teach you Kabbalah, but they don't teach you any Maasim. They don't teach you to be a religious Jew. Right? So it's Chachmaso Merubo Memaasim. That's a very dangerous thing. You shouldn't be teaching people these kinds of things. It's a big problem. It's a big problem. So there was, you know, in the Balatanya, he was very big into sharing a lot of Kabbalah in his Chassidus. And Rav Pinchas of Koritz, he complained a lot to the Balatani. He didn't like the Balatani's approach to be infusing so much Kabbalah to the average people when he was teaching. So the Balatani answered with a mashal, with a parable. He talks about a dying prince who's in need of medicine. And the doctor says he needs this medicine, but if we give him too much of this medicine, he's going to die from an overdose. But we got to give it to him. We got to give him a few drops. And without the few drops, he'll die. We got to be careful not to give him an overdose. So the person in the story made sure to give him just the right amount of medicine that he survived. And a little bit more would have killed him, but any less, he would have died. So the same thing over here, you know, the Yidden nowadays, we're dying. Ramish dying. There's nothing, our Yiddishkeit is extremely sick right now. And if we don't give it a little bit of strong medicine, the patient's going to die. And Kabbalah is that little bit of medicine. You got to be very careful. If you give an overdose, they'll suffer a drug overdose of spirituality. And if you don't give them anything, they're going to die. So the Balatanya hoped that those who would follow in his ways would know exactly how to dish out the Kabbalah in a way that would not be an overdose. So that's what the Rebbe is dealing with, this issue over here. How can we teach Kabbalah? How can we teach these things about things we know we're never, our Chachma is never gonna, our actions are never gonna match up with the Chachma? And how are we gonna measure this? So that's a very important question. To answer that question, the Rebbe is compelled to give us a basic introduction to certain Kabbalistic concepts. Some of them, some of you have been with us for a while may know, and for others it will be new stuff. But this is basic Kabbalah principles that we're going to work through today, and probably tomorrow a little bit more, to understand the fundamental workings of who and what we are. If we understand who and what we are, then we can begin to understand how this all fits into the Kabbalah here. You're at the very bottom of the page of Kuf Samach Hey. Avol yedua misvarim hakadoshim. We know from the holy svarim, sheyesh leish Yisrael, a Jewish person, not a non-Jew, a Jewish person has, turning the page to Kuf Samach Vav, has a nefesh, a ruach, neshama, chaya yechida. A Jewish person has five levels of soul. The lowest level, hanefesh, those three levels, hanefesh, ruach, and neshama, those three levels, mishkanan begufa adam, they reside in the body of a person. Now, the Rebbe is oversimplifying things, and we've already, in some of our works, gone beyond what he's saying, and he's purposely simplifying it. He's not going into detail, and therefore, we'd appreciate questions that don't compel us to go beyond the simplicity that the Rebbe said. Because on page Kuf Samaches, he's going to tell us, let's just keep it simple. Don't try to learn the whole Kabbalah in one sitting over here. So, but basically, the nefesh of a person is that part of the soul that is able to eternalize the physical activities that a human being does in this world. And it's manifest through the physical actions that we do that that's responsible for all the good things we can do, and that eternalizes a level of ourselves. And it's that basic level of nefesh that gives us any sense of spirituality in the quote-unquote mundane aspects of life. And that is 100% inside of the body of a person. 100%. It's all inside. The next level is the ruach. The ruach gives the human being the ability to speak. Because that's what ruach is, wind. It's that part of soul that comes from outside of the person, coming inside of the person. Just like when you speak and you breathe, the air is coming from outside, it comes inside the lungs, heart's pumping it, and then comes out. So it's part of the soul that comes from out and comes in. The neshama gives us the ability to think words of spirituality, concepts that you could not understand. And this, to my understanding, is where the non-Jew falls short already. The non-Jew does not have neshama. He may have a nefesh, he may have a ruach, right? But he doesn't have a neshama chaya yechida. So that's where they're stopped. It's to understand spiritual concepts that cannot be understood by human beings alone and can only be understood as a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's what we talked about in the ladies' class on Tuesday. We talked about a couple of years ago, the Shabbos class. It talks about when Moshe comes down with the Luchos, right? We say in our davening, Yismach Moshe b'matanas chelko. Moshe was happy with the gift of his portion. And what was the gift? So there's a lot of discussion, but many hold that the gift is Shnei Luchot Avanim Haridu B'yado. He came down with two tablets. He came down with the Torah. And it says in the Torah, Parshas Kisisa, it was when Moshe came down, it was kechalosol ledaber, when Hashem finished speaking to him, he came down with the luchos. And the word kechaloso is written defectively, missing a vav. And it's written more like the word kala, a bride. And Moshe Rabbeinu came down as a bride who received a free gift. And the rabbis say that Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to learn Torah in the mountain all 40 days. He kept learning and forgetting, learning and forgetting, learning and forgetting. Couldn't chop it. Couldn't get it. Till the end of 40 days, God said, I'll give it to you as a gift. As a wedding gift. And that's the only way Moshe is able to retain Torah. As a wedding gift. So what do we see? That the Torah, the knowledge of Hashem, of Hashem's will that transcends human understanding. That's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's mamish a gift. You can't get it without Hashem's gift. And that ties in to the gift of Shabbos. Shabbos is also a gift. And what's the gift of Shabbos? That's the ability to tap into one's soul, which is a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu too. And the ability to recognize that one is a spiritual being and to sense that spirituality within a person, that is a gift of Shabbos. And that's how those two gifts fit together. And that's why we talk about the gift of Torah and the gift of Shabbos in that bracha on Shabbos that we say. And that a Jew, to be able to feel that spiritual high that Shabbos can give you, that's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you have to be able to prepare yourself to receive that gift. Just like Torah is a gift. So therefore, what do we see? Essential Torah. I'm talking about reading some words in Hebrew that are in an Arts Shul Chumash. That's not Torah. That's as the Rebbe says, it's the garment. It's the garment. That's not real Torah. You got to find Hashem in those words. If you don't find Hashem in those words that you're reading in the Parsha, you know, and Yisro heard what happened to the Jewish people, Vayishma Yisro. That's a nice garment, but it's not Hashem. It's not real Torah. So if you can't find the Torah in those words, you haven't been learning Torah. How am I going to find that? You need a gift. You got to work hard. Only because you have a neshama, only because you have a third level of soul that is able to understand concepts that are beyond the normal physical understanding of life, does any Jew have any hope of really learning Torah? It's the only way you're going to learn Torah. That's why you need a neshama. A neshama was given to you to understand that which a normal human being can't understand, and each and every one of us is capable of doing that. But what is it that you're understanding? You're understanding, you're sensing God through Torah. You're able to sense HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Torah. No secular scholar in Bar Ilan University can ever get to that, because they're totally detached from that. And the real beauty of Torah lies in that. And many of you are saying, I don't know what the Rabbi's talking about. That's right. You really haven't learned Torah yet. That's what the Rabbi's saying. You have to know how to learn Torah. But that's what you're giving an neshama for. And that's why it's prohibited to teach a non-Jew Torah. Because he can never understand it. He doesn't have a neshama. He doesn't have the tools to understand Torah. He hears a word here, a word there. What is this? You know, how come there's this law, that law? It's crazy. Doesn't make sense. Get out of here. I'm not interested in it. You look at the stories in the Chumash, superficially, you don't understand anything that's going on. So that's what, and now that neshama really, 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 now this is where I don't want to, you know, get overcomplicated. But really it's outside of your body. It's outside of your body, but it sparks off and can be manifest within the brain. So to that extent, the Rebbe means to say it's inside the body. But really, 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 the neshama is not inside your body. It hovers. It hovers close to your body. And when you do the Ratzon of Hashem, it gets closer and it sparks itself, whatever that means, into one's brain and gives your brain the ability to connect to Hashem. And that's why we say it's within the body. And God purposely put it outside the body in case you do averus, it runs away and never can be sullied by the things that we do. From the level of neshama onwards, never any damage. Not possible any damage. And that's what God put outside. So he says it's inside. It's not really inside. But that's the three levels of soul. The three levels of soul that your actions should be eternalized. When you do a mitzvah, how come when I do a mitzvah, how come when I put on tefillin, I'm making a connection to Hashem in a spiritual way? It's the nefesh that's pulsating through my fingers is what puts, quote unquote, a magical power into the action. And the action all of a sudden is something that sets off fireworks in every spiritual dimension of existence. It's because there is a nefesh within myself. That ruach is able to get myself excited and to feel this close. I can feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what you need a ruach for. And you need a shama to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These are all things that an animal could never have. And as far as the third level on, a non-Jew can't have either. A non-Jew, technically, if he fulfills the seven mitzvahs of Noach, B'nai Noach, and he does them because HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded Moshe that non-Jews should be civil people, he has a nefesh that is able to do spiritual things to a certain extent, to a limited extent, not to the extent that a Jew can. He has a ruach where he could get emotionally connected to certain lower aspects of spirituality. A non-Jew is possible to have that. But Torah, forget it. They can't enter the realm of Torah. And if you teach them, you teach a guy, it's an avera to teach them Torah, because they will never be able to understand it. They will just adulterate it and abuse it. Okay, if a person wants to convert, that's a different story. But generally speaking, we don't teach Torah to non-Jews. Okay, already on one line, we're going to remember, keep the questions focused to the topic and not what ifs and what this and what that, because we won't entertain them. Yes?
Of course, the question. I just want to ask you, based on this last thing you said about, let's say somebody at Ben Noah, who's obviously connected to Hashem, etc. Let's say you don't specifically teach him, but are you saying it's impossible for that person, even if somebody somehow they learn, let's say from the internet, they're listening to Shiurim, etc., to learn? Like, I don't understand.
They're not getting the goal of Torah learning. The Torah learning is to taste Hashem. That they're never going to do. Never going to do that.
But on an intellectual level, they can understand.
Intellectual level, they can pick up facts and figures. That's not Torah. Okay. That's not Torah. That's not Torah at all. So you memorize facts and figures. Now, there's people who learn history for years and don't know 1 ounce of history. 1776, 1812, but they don't understand how that changed the world. And the truth of the matter is, without Torah, you don't, even with a history degree, you don't know anything about history. You don't know anything about history. You don't know it at all. Right? So facts and figures, yeah, 5 books of the Torah, yeah, okay. Avram tried to kill Yitzchak at the Akedah. Yitzchak, they don't understand what that means. It's superficial. They don't grow from that learning of the Torah. Yeah.
You mentioned before that it's even prohibited to teach Torah to a non-frum Jew because even he doesn't have the capacity to sense Hashem.
Did I say that today?
No.
I didn't say that. To a non-Jew. Can't teach Torah to a non-Jew. Now the truth of the matter is, it tells us in the Gemara, and it's codified in the Shulchan Aruch in Yeridea, that you're really not allowed to teach, take on as a Talmud, as a student, a person who doesn't have good midos, a person who's not interested in Yiddishkeit. It's not so simple how much Torah you can teach them either. It's not so simple, because if you teach them Torah, they can adulterate the Torah too. You have to be very careful. You can teach them Torah, but you have to be very careful what parts you teach them. Because since they're a Jew who's totally devoid of spirituality, can be worse than a non-Jew, you can be very careful what you teach them. You try to bring them back to Yiddishkeit, but you know that's why we give them the fluffy aspects of Torah. We don't give them anything that needs a lot of thought. You have to almost teach him like you would teach a goy who's trying to convert. Let's give him a little taste here, a little taste there, nothing really serious. You have to be very careful with that. Yeah.
You're doing Kabbalah 101 to introduce us to concepts in terms of being in touch with Hasidic prophecy. And you say, a non-Jew cannot have neshama. So what is Bilam?
Okay, were you here last week when we talked about Bilam? It's an exception to the rule, and it doesn't fit into the normal behaviors for a non-Jew. A non-Jew should not have prophecy. God can do whatever he wants. Just like God can split the sea, God can put prophecy into Bilam without the requisite components necessary. He broke the rule, that's all. But normally they can't. Normally they can't do it. He broke the rule. He gave him what he did not deserve and could not have on his own. That's all.
So what's the what's the difference between what Bilam got and what Moshe got? Then gifts.
It was a gift, but without even the ability to handle that gift. It was beyond the normal rules of a gift. It was a different kind of gift. A gift that didn't even fit into the rules of a gift. That's all. Once you break the rules, you break the rules. What's the difference? You don't have to explain it when you break the rules. Right? How does Hashem make the water split? That breaks every rule. Every rule that God made in this world about water. So he broke the rules. He broke the rules with Bilam. It's not supposed. He doesn't have the wherewithal to hold on to prophecy. How did that? It's a miracle. For sure it's a miracle. Like a talking donkey. How does a donkey talk? He doesn't have the vocal cords to talk. He can't talk. Hashem wants like a miracle. It makes a miracle. Well, he has a kasha and a miracle. Miracle doesn't have to fit into any accepted rules. So Bilam doesn't have to fit into any rules. Finished.
They called the donkey a miracle. They didn't call Bilam a miracle.
That's right. For a goy, for a non-Jew to have prophecy, it's a miracle. It's a miracle. And God went to that extent to make a miracle so the non-Jews would never complain that they didn't have a prophet. That's how far God goes to make sure nobody should complain. But they still complain. Yeah?
Sounds like these neshamot are connected together.
We'll see.
Because how
sounds like these neshamot are connected. We'll see. Because hold on to your thought. Just hold on to your thought. We don't have to discuss it further. He's going to get to it. Yeah?
This might be related. The rabbi said that the neshama kind of hovers near you and then kind of runs away if you go there. But we've learned in the past that many times our neshama just covers all sorts of schmutz and stuff that we do.
Okay, so that's a general. A lot of times, you got to remember, when we use the term neshama, there's two ways of defining neshama. Neshama can be just the general term for the soul, right? And then neshama is used as a specific term for the third level of soul. So a lot of times you'll hear us say the neshama is covered up. So it's in general. We're talking about the neshama being covered up. It's covered up. We're blocking it. And you know, you understand, covering is in an existential way, not in a physical way. So, you know, pushing it away and creating layers of coarseness, you know, it's covering it up, even though it's not covered. We have these three-dimensional ways of looking at a soul, which is not realistic. Any term we use can't be correct. You don't cover a neshama, per se. You can't cover it up. It's not physical, so it can't get a cover. So it's more like a blockage. We say cover it up. So not to be confused with those terms. Okay, let's proceed another line. That's what six words did to us. Right? And then the Chaya and the Yechida. The Chaya and the Yechida are totally beyond what we can understand. Totally beyond what we understand. Chaya is the roots of the life force. It's that ability, it enables us to have the ability to think. It's the building blocks of thought, which none of us can even think about. When you talk, you know how much prerequisite intelligence has to be inside of you that you're not even cognizant of. How words come out, how words automatically formulate themselves to make sense. You're not thinking about that. You're not thinking about what word to say before what word. It's the roots of the ability to even think, which is well beyond what we can even comprehend. And then Yechida is ultimately the place of connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. These are ideas that were way, way, way beyond us. And that's what he's saying. The nefesh, ruach, and neshama, mishkan b'guf ha'adam. As he now says, ha'nefesh ba'kaved, the nefesh manifests itself in the liver, because the liver is the source that purifies the blood. And the Torah says, ki ha'dam hu ha'nefesh, for the blood is the soul, meaning to say that the soul resides, the nefesh, the lowest level of nefesh, resides in the bloodstream, and the storehouse of the blood really is the liver. Haruach balev, and the spirit is in the heart, because the heart is really what makes the lungs work, and the lungs what makes us breathe. And the ruach resides in that zone of the respiratory system.
What should be the oath of the head?
But the lungs don't operate without the heart. That's what makes the lungs operate. If the heart stops beating, the lungs stop moving.
Everything.
That's what it's a heart and lung machine. It's essentially connected there, right? You can have blood even after your heart's not pumping. You still have blood. The blood's there, right? But it's really the heart. Without the heart, you don't have that whole system of the lungs operating. Clearly, it comes from the beating of the heart. V'neshama v'malcha, and the neshama is manifest through the brains. Fine. Avol hachayim v'yechida, but the yechayim, the yechida, gedolos ha-kedoshos hein harbe megufa. They're so great and so holy, much more than beyond the body. They cannot be contained at all by a body or manifest in a body. They can't be enclosed in any way within the human being. Rak mimal legufo shoros umakivas oso. But rather they are beyond the body, hovering over the body. Lo shehei miyutaras, not that they're extra things, appendages that are not necessary. And God for the person doesn't need them. Adrav, it's the exact opposite. Ikara saying they're primary for him. Lo. Ulachola never shruch and shamar soul. For his never shruch and shamar, they depend on chayin yechida. Without chayin yechida, these wouldn't exist. So to help you understand this very complex concept, the Rebbe will give you a mushal. So he'll give you a mushal, and then later we'll give you maybe a more contemporary mushal. Ubimashal gufani tavin yoser. With a physical example, you'll understand the concept better. Afimena doimel agarmi lanimshal. Even though it's not totally comparable to what we're explaining, as no mashal, no example can totally help us be 100% aligned with what it's teaching us in terms of spirituality that is beyond the physical. But it'll give our simple minds some way to understand conceptually what's going on. So, for example, hamashpech. A funnel. Shal yodav shoivchi mayim v'yayin v'chula el atzlochis. That through the funnel, you're able to pour water and wine and other liquids into a bottle. So imagine to yourself a bottle that has a very narrow neck on the top. Okay? And you want to pour into that. So of course, as we all know, if you have a very narrow opening and try to pour in, doesn't always work so well. So what do we put in? A nice funnel. It's got a funnel, and a funnel usually is wide on the top, narrow at the bottom. Right? So picture in your mind a glass bottle, a container, with a narrow neck, and you got this funnel that's wide on the top for which we can pour into it. Okay, keep that in image. If you want to have a little bit more, figure if you have a water cooler in your house, where you've got the compartment in which the water is held, you got the little spigots that the water comes out, and you got this giant 18-gallon water bottle, 18-liter bottle on top from which water is coming in. Okay? Have that image in your mind. Okay? So now, he explains. Rak sofo, but the end of the funnel, bepiv hatzar nichnasu al toch atzlochis. With its narrow mouth, it enters into the bottle. Verosho harachov, and the wide top of it, shuikara, which is the primary part of the funnel, asher sham kol hamayim o hayayin nimtza, where most of the water and the wine is found. Mima'al latzlochis nishar. It remains beyond the bottle. Okay, so you got that idea? You got this. I think with the water cooler, it really fits in nicely. You got 18 liters sitting on top, but only a little bit gets into the compartment. Right? And then, and then you got the little spigots even below that. But basically, there's a lot. It's very wide on the top. Whew. And it can't get in. But there's a little opening, a spout of the funnel is small enough to let it come in. And that's how it gets all into the bottle. That concept, right? So there can be a lot more water in that bottle on top, that giant funnel, right? You can have a lot more water than what gets into the bottle, than what can get into the bottle. Kein ha'or v'hakdusha asher nimtza b'kerv ish Yisrael. So too is the light and the holiness that is found inside a Jewish person. V'hu ikaro v'atzmuso. This is the main essential part of the person. Kedusha ilah. It's a supernal holiness. From worlds that are way up there, he. V'niskatma. And that spiritual water, we'll call it, right, has been made small. V'nitztamtzma. And it's been constricted. Ad l'ruach b'nei nevim. Until we get to that level of the spirit of the children, the b'nei nevim, of what we're talking about here. And it's even a smaller spark for our generation of very puny children of Nevi'im of what gets in. Only to that little bit that the body, to the degree that it purifies itself, is able to take in of that spirituality. V'nislabish bo, it becomes enclosed in it, v'yihibon, and it manifests itself as l'neshama b'moach. It's that aspect of neshama that sparks into the brain, ruach b'alev, the level of ruach that's in the heart, u'lenefesh b'kaved, and to the nefesh that's in the liver. Kol kli, every vessel, kifi midas kabolaso, to the degree that it's able to accept, midas zoshal kedusha mekabels. It accepts this level of holiness. So what we have over here is the unbelievable spiritual power that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. An unbelievable spiritual holiness that's unlimited. And it's a giant funnel. That's how much potential is there to come into the person. And it's a very narrow opening, and our bottle is quite dirty and doesn't allow too much to get in. If that opening gets filled with junk on the top, how much gets in? And from what gets into there, and then, you know, just like in our example, if we could make it more dimensional, you know, if that initial hole where you put the bottle in is filled with junk, how much water is going to get in? And then if that, not much of that gets in, then we got the spigots. And the spigot wants to get more to come out. And that spigot can be filled with junk. How much is going to come through the spigot even then? So there's only so much that can go through. But even though only a little bit goes through, and that's what we perceive in our neshamas, but there's an infinite amount that potentially could get in there that's not getting in there. And only a little drop is getting in there. We're in the middle. And Mr. Shem, tomorrow we'll continue it and elaborate on this greatly.